good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from Chicago and the Democratic National Convention, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning from Chicago. It's 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, August 21st, 2024, 76 days till Election Day, and surely another beautiful morning across Wisconsin, whether you're listening on the Civic Media Radio Network or through the app, watching us on social media video or on demand by podcast. We appreciate having you here to get your day going. I want to say, normally, I got a question for you. I got multiple questions for you. What was that roll call last night? Was that a party? And did you see all the cheeseheads, the literal cheeseheads, the original hats in the Wisconsin delegation? You could find the Wisconsin delegation easier than pretty much anybody else. It was quite an event last night, the second night of the Democratic National Convention, where the votes were totaled up ceremoniously because, you know, the votes had already been calculated. Kamala Harris was already the nominee. So they figured, well, if we're going to do this, let's do this. And what a dance party that erupted as a result of it. So we're going to talk a bit about that, of course. We'll also talk about the split screen, a night that was unlike anything seen at a political convention. At the same time that the roll call was wrapping up, 90 miles away in Milwaukee, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz were packing Fiserv Forum. I mean, one ticket, two arenas, both filled with enthusiastic crowds, had to be making Donald Trump just wild. So we'll talk more about the convention. It is Wednesday, so we'll have our climate check segment. Melissa Baldoff will talk about what Democrats are talking about at the convention in terms of climate and the environment. They're talking certainly about the Biden-Harris administration's accomplishments, but also the aspirations of a Harris-Walz administration. Then in our second hour, we'll hear from some of the delegates from Wisconsin here in Chicago. I've selected three of them that I talked to among many at the Wisconsin delegation breakfast yesterday, and talked to them as they attended the convention on behalf of their home counties up north. And we discussed the impact of the new legislative maps that undo years of Republican cheating. And they also help assess a proposal by Republican Congressman Tom Tiffany. And we have not taken time to get into this. I wanted to get a local perspective on it, and you're going to get one. Tom Tiffany has proposed taking what's already working, what's already a beautiful thing, the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. And he's talking about turning it into a national park. And at first blush, people might say, oh, that's a promotion. That's a big deal. That's great. No. It's not exactly what it seems. There is a real difference between what you do with a national lakeshore versus what you can do in and around a national park. And in true Tom Tiffany fashion, the idea is likely meant to benefit developers and not our natural resources. The telephone here is always 855-75-CIVIC. You can call or text us. You can also comment through social media or send us an email, radio@upnorthnews.wi.com. I'm here in Chicago. I'm well rested, more so than if I'd worked the night shift. Greg Bach and I, well, this is our job, is to get up this early. And there's always the temptation, like, oh, these are conventions. There's parties that go on well into the wee smalls. And once again, I feel a lot better for acting my age and having not gone. Greg, good morning. I saw people at that delegation breakfast yesterday who they had a little side order of regret to go with their eggs and bacon for staying up that late.
I can't. The notion I would show up for, like, hey, everybody, this was really fun today. Sip, sip. Well, good night. Gotta go to bed.
Enjoyed my 3 minutes here at the party. It's done.
Yeah.
I will say that one member of the delegation who shall go unnamed, as I was approaching various people doing interviews yesterday morning, he says, Pat, I'm too bleeping hungover to talk to you right now. I need coffee. It's just like, well, I appreciate the honesty. Thank you.
It was Barack Obama. Yeah,
of course it was. No, it was not. It was It was a fun time.
Yeah.
But that Monday night one was at House of Blues, which, you know, is a landmark, you know, nightclub. People would love to go there. I would have loved to have gone there. But again, for folks who are now going to be going to another day of the delegation breakfasts, they have probably figured out that these conventions run late. These speeches run late, yeah. Especially when you turn it into a party like last night, which I did not know was coming. I thought, okay, it's time for the roll call of the states. Usually a pretty dry affair. You know, it's like this formal thing, you know, Minnesota casts its 111 votes for, you know, the land of sky blue waters, blah, 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 blah. That's what I thought was going to happen. So I left to go get some dinner. So I've got my styrofoam container, you know, with a salad in there, a little chicken salad. And I bring it up to the room and I'm looking at my phone on the way. And the things I'm reading do not make sense. Like Lil Jon? What? What? I turn on the TV and see this DJ up front and you know, different song for every state. And it was amazing. I really wish I would have known about this. I also would have tried harder to get into the convention hall if I had known it was going to be that kind of a party.
Yeah, so Kamala was in town yesterday, and I guess they watched it on simulcast too, and I was supposed to be there, but I was not able to go, unfortunately. But it just, I mean, yeah, make it a party, make it fun, make it a good time. I mean, that's the thing, is like that is what this campaign is all about now. Fun, joy, excitement,
joy,
energy. Yes. And I don't mean to cast whatever you want to call it, but like I just think of the RNC where they're like, yeah, everybody, we've got
Hulk Kid Hogan.
Rock. Kid Rock. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just I do Democrats know how to party better? I don't know. That's maybe we do.
Yes. No. The answer is yes. They're not always better at voting because they're younger and they're like, oh, I'm too cool to vote. And there's a lot of that that's gone on in the past. But they definitely win. They show up.
Yeah.
They show up well, and they show up to have a good time.
Yeah.
And I for one was there for it. You know, once I got back to the room and put it on, and I'm like, okay, this is a you know, and this is coming from somebody who's kind of an old, you know, traditionalist now at this point. And you know, I liked kind of that formality. I liked the ceremony that was involved. There was history. Clearly the times are changing. People are moving on. And if we're going to announce Georgia's vote, then let's have Lil Jon come on down and start singing, you know, being the Atlanta native that he is. And you know, then there are other people in the crowd that we'll talk about who made, you know, various announcements and pitches from their state's delegations as well. So that was all great. And then you had the speeches come up, and I got to tell you, what was Michelle Obama's old slogan? When they go low, we go high.
Yeah.
Now the new slogan is, when they go low, we go get Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
Because
we go get mom.
She came to play. She did not come to fool around. And we're going to play some clips where, you know, she tried the nice guy approach. Now we're going to do it this way. And I think it was monstrously effective for a national TV audience as she spells out, you know, what she really thinks of Donald Trump. And then Barack Obama came along and did the same thing. So we'll play some clips about that in just a little bit. I wish I didn't have to stay up all the way through the last speech. I'm sure I was asleep within 3 minutes of them saying goodnight. I don't know how late you went into it with anything, because you know, you have your own long day of work out there.
I was here at the station until the afternoon. Then, my brain just stopped working. Then I had to help with drag bingo at Lakefront Brewery, which is always a good time. We had a great time, but, And can I just give a really, very quick shout out to my wife, Bridget?
Yes, of course.
Last night I got a flat tire. Now, we live in Kenosha, and I was like, all right, well, and I had to park my car a quarter of a mile away from the venue because my tire was flat. And I was like, all right, I got to call AAA, but I got to do that, or I got to do whatever. I'm going to be up late tonight. This is going to be a problem. She says, can I come help you? And I say, you're in Kenosha. I'm here. It's Milwaukee. Just, and traffic's terrible. I'll do it. So we call AAA. She goes to the site. She takes care of it. She helps get the tire changed. And I mean, made my night exponentially easier and got to bed earlier than I could have thought of. And she's wonderful. And I missed all the speeches and I'm tired.
Bridget, you are the best.
She is the best. Seriously, she is the best. She's an angel among angels.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Thank you. That was great. And look, let's be honest. Not every spouse is in a position to do that.
No.
Either they're working or kids or whatever. And others are in a position to do it and go, you know,
I mean,
I can't.
I would have totally understood if you'd be like, hey, I can't. You're an hour away. And I didn't even ask her to. She kept saying, like, let me help you, or I can help you. I'm like, oh, fine.
No,
partnership.
I know of somebody who was in a real pickle and called their spouse for help, and the spouse, and apparently they weren't doing well at the time, and the spouse was like, no. and they were not their spouse much longer after that. So I mean, if you can't do the basics of answering a call for help, you ain't gonna make it. So Bridget, thank you so much. Yeah. I'll close this segment with one note about covering delegation breakfasts. And we were at one of the hotels, and of course the hotels down here are monstrous, you know, because they cover all these major conferences and conventions and things like that. So at this particular hotel, there was in all the ballrooms, one of them had Wisconsin, and then there was Maryland, and there's Puerto Rico over there and everything. So you already had a big chunk of the convention already at this particular hotel. And so in every one of them, there's like a little buffet outside where you get your scrambled eggs and your bacon and your little tiny pastries that they have there. And then you listen to all these VIPs that come by, and the Wisconsin delegation heard from Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, and from Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, and Colorado Senator Michael Bennett stopped by. And then, you know, for 2 hours, I'm covering the speeches and I'm doing the interviews. The whole time the delegates are coming in and they're eating and leaving and eating, and you're looking at the food, but it's like, that's not for you. You're not a delegate. So after 2 hours of that, because you do a radio show first and then you go do that, then it was time for my breakfast because it was coming up on 11 a.m. And I got to one of those deep dish pizza places near the hotel. Oh my God. This deep dish pizza, the slice. I ordered a slice. The slice was as big as my head.
Yeah.
And I finished it all because it was so good. That was the best breakfast ever, which is good because I may be doing the whole routine again today. When we come back, we will hear more of the clips from Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, and low energy Donald Trump too on Up North News Radio, live from Civic Media, live from Chicago. That's what it sounded like
as
Georgia's delegation was announced. And it was amazing. First off, I got to say, up at the podium was Jason Ray, Rice Lake native. He was the youngest ever to serve on the Democratic National Committee. He got the political bug early. He was on the DNC at age 17. He has been a fixture in Wisconsin Democratic mm-hmm. Party circles forever. He's now the secretary of the Democratic National Committee, which made him the secretary of the convention. And there have only been like four of those in party history. And it was a competitive race to get there. So he didn't just, get there for nothing. And so he already had this wonderful duty, this very important duty. He gets to be up there when all of this happens, when they decide to bring a DJ up, his name was DJ Cassidy, and off they went, announcing the roll call of the states. You had DJ Cassidy was in a bright blue double-breasted suit, different tunes for every state. I loved when they got to Minnesota. Of course, they played Prince in 1999. Kansas, of course, got Kansas, Carry On My Wayward Son. And you know what Wisconsin got? They got a little House of Pain. It was time to jump around.
Why would they get jump around?
Yeah, I don't know.
They're a Boston group. We could have gotten Steve Miller, Les Paul, Bo Deans. We could have gotten so many things.
We got jump around. Everybody knows jump around.
Weird. Okay.
It was so fun. But the convention itself, the second night, had a double dose of Obama firepower to validate Vice President Kamala Harris and deliver what you would call an unsparing indictment of Vice President Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris delivered an unsparing indictment of Donald Trump. he said, reading his Associated Press copy very carefully. So let's get to some of what was said here. On the undercard first, the Republican convention was all about Trump. The Democratic convention wasn't just the Obamas making the case for the vice president, but the grandsons of Jimmy Carter and John F. Kennedy also portrayed Kamala Harris as the natural heir of past Democratic leaders. These were wonderful remarks, again, about service, about going into politics for all of the right reasons. There were speeches as well from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders to, again, underscore Democratic Party unity. There was Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, who, again, was unsparing in his criticisms of Donald Trump and his alleged status of a billionaire. And Pritzker said, basically, you know, take it from a real billionaire. You know, this guy is not the real deal. There were former Trump supporters who spoke. His former press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, talked about the things that Trump says about his own supporters, you know, when nobody else is around. There was a former Trump voter from Alabama who told the convention that Trump's tariffs make life harder for construction workers like himself. The mayor of Mesa, Arizona, Republican John Giles, talked about how, you know, the best path back to a functional two-party system is to support Kamala Harris and rid the GOP of what's happening with Trumpism. Then there were the remarks from the second gentleman, Doug Emhoff. You don't need much time there to understand that he and Kamala are a true love story. They talked about dating and their relationships and their mixed family. The blended family that is so typical of America now, and the things that work best about them. But then we get to, you know, the main acts of the night. And we're going to start with Michelle Obama. And Michelle Obama did not hold back. She set this up by calling out Donald Trump, by saying that for years, he did everything in his power to try to make people fear us, she said. His limited and narrow view of the world made him feel threatened by the existence of two hardworking, highly educated, successful people who also happened to be Black. And she was not done yet. Greg's got two clips, and Greg, I'll just have you play these back to back. It was time for Michelle Obama to say, now let me tell you what she really thinks.
She understands that most of us will never be afforded the grace of failing forward. We will never benefit from the affirmative action of generational wealth. If we bankrupt a business or choke in a crisis, we don't get a second, third, or fourth chance. If things don't go our way, we don't have the luxury of whining or cheating others to get further ahead. No. We don't get to change the rules so we always win. If we see a mountain in front of us, we don't expect there to be an escalator waiting to take us to the top. No. We put our heads down. We get to work. In America, we do something.
And then she went on to talk more about, there we go.
Who's going to tell him that the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those Black jobs?
There it is. As Wayne Larrabee would say, there is your dagger. The affirmative action of generational wealth.
It doesn't fit
on a bumper sticker, but it's gonna anyway.
How have I in all my life, knowing the all the arguments of affirmative action, How have I never heard that phrase until right the affirmative action of generational wealth?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's good writing.
It was so good. And then it was time to bring out Barack Obama, and we'll go past the we'll play later the clip from him saying that he appreciated the warm welcome, even though he's the only one stupid enough to speak after Michelle Obama. But two quick clips here. First, talking about how much healthcare has improved under the Biden-Harris administration.
On healthcare, we should all be proud of the enormous progress that we've made through the Affordable Care Act, providing millions of people access to affordable coverage, protecting millions more from unscrupulous insurance practices. And I noticed, by the way, that since it's become popular, they don't call it Obamacare no more. But
no, they don't. But he does give the example again of who's actually fighting for you. And we'll play that clip coming up in our next hour as well. And we're also going to play a clip from Donald Trump. J.D. Vance was in Kenosha talking about, of course, law and order. And Donald Trump was in Michigan, of course, talking about, you know, law and order, because the fear factor is about all they have left going for them right now. But Trump's remarks were, they were very low energy. And if they'd been Joe Biden's remarks, there'd be a lot of talk about, is he too old and too tired? You're going to hear old, tired Donald Trump at some point later in the show. But up next, Melissa Baldoff has our climate check, the climate discussions at the Democratic National Convention. Coming up next, you're up north. North News Radio's coverage of the Democratic National Convention continues now with a conversation, as we do every Wednesday morning, with Melissa Baldoff, our weekly climate check, a convention edition of it. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you? Having fun at the convention?
So far, so good. We'll see how the entire week goes here. Hey, the convention Wonderful. Is much more than what you see on primetime TV and the people at the podium, you know, going, Mr. Speaker, you know, this and that, Mr. Chairman. They do some work behind the scenes in what are called caucuses. And there are all kinds of caucuses out there, depending on the party, depending on the issue. For the sake of our climate check, we're going to look at what the Democratic National Committee's Environment and Climate Crisis Council is talking about this week in Chicago. And look, we all thought originally this was going to be, you know, President Biden accepting the nomination to run for a second term. It's now going to be Vice President Kamala Harris instead, and we'll get to her in a moment. But I will say that this climate caucus has already spelled out, and they counted them, 322 Biden climate achievements. Melissa, it's pretty fair to say, and we've been watching presidents for, you know, some decades now, this one, without a doubt, gets the prize for being the most climate aware and climate friendly president in our lifetimes.
Absolutely. There has not been what President Biden has done for the environment cannot be. I just don't think we can overstate how significant the Inflation Reduction Act and many of the other federal investments we've seen, how significant those will be for generations to come in terms of what they will mean for improving our climate and growing our clean energy economy. It's a generational investment that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris worked very hard to see through. And I just don't think that we can say enough about how incredible, with the odds stacked against them, that they were able to get that legislation passed and get the money flowing into communities and into states all over the country, and already to be seeing the, already seeing the positive benefits. Sometimes people, you know, you see a big, you know, big piece of legislation pass and you hear these huge billions of dollars of, you know, these big numbers, and you think, when is this ever going to happen? And in Wisconsin, you know, we're already seeing it. We had the energy secretary, Secretary Granholm, here not that long ago, talking about the home energy rebates program that launched in Wisconsin. And that is money already coming into Wisconsin to help people make energy efficiency updates in their homes and get rebates on those and help people save money on their utility bills every single month. So this is money that is already coming to people. They're not having to wait years and years to see a benefit. It is helping people already right now. And I think that's one of the you know, best things about the Inflation Reduction Act is that we're seeing the positives of it, you know, pretty immediately.
Yeah. Last week, we spoke at length about electric vehicles and charging stations. So we won't really need to dwell on that this week. But as the Climate Caucus is listing the achievements of the past 4 years, they include the closing of tax loopholes for big oil companies, the creation of 271,000 jobs related to green energy, to cleaner energy sources, protecting more land and water than any administration ever before, 24 million acres, and devoting $18 billion toward conservation projects. There are more than a dozen new standards to reduce pollution from power plants and cars and drinking water. But Melissa, I'll close with this one of all of the achievements they talk about. Saving Americans more than $27 billion on electricity bills by 2030. And we've said before, like when it comes to, you know, the little fees on concert tickets and little bank charges and things like that, that these are small things that can really add up. And I think people are going to look back. Let's take 2030 here. They're going to look back and say, yeah, it was just a bunch of little things that were done that month by month, we all saved billions upon billions of dollars through lower electric bills, which, yeah, it's good for the climate, but it's really good for, you know, Mr. and Ms. Middle America who have to try to make a budget every month.
Absolutely. You know, the utility bills are getting higher all the time. And in many communities around the state, around the country, you have folks who are experiencing a very high energy burden, especially as other costs are rising for them, you know, as groceries are more expensive, anything else. And when those utility bills go up, it's, you know, that's not something you can, you know, you can clip a coupon for. That's not something you can say, oh, well, you know, we'll kind of, you know, grocery shop a little bit smarter. You know, once you've kind of turned up the, you know, turned up the air or made it a little cooler heat in the wintertime, or if you turned it off completely, you know, there's not a whole else lot you can do, you know, to lower your utility bills sometimes other than, energy efficiency and weatherization, because the amount of energy you're using is the amount of energy you're using sometimes. So making those upgrades and weatherizing your home, those are the things that can bring those big savings. It's not sexy as much as, you know, some other things are, but it can make a really, really big difference for people. And especially as you add it up over the years, it's a very significant amount of savings. And that's really important because people were talking about needing help. And I think it's a way that Joe Biden was listening too. He wasn't right. Just going after those big ticket things. It wasn't just, hey, let's do these electric vehicle rebates for people. He recognized that not everybody can afford to buy an EV or maybe wants to buy one right now, but everybody can save some money on their utility bills.
And so as a result of having that record, he's not the one running on the record this year, but his vice president is. And we spoke a few weeks back about, you know, the Kamala Harris record on climate issues. So again, in the theme of a convention here, it's not just this climate caucus that is hearing good news about the past, but it's all of the delegates here who are looking at the vice president and seeing that, you know, if she were to win and if Democrats were to have control of Congress, I mean, they're hardly going to rest on their laurels over the next 4 years. What kinds of things would you like to think that a Harris administration would be working on to further the, you know, the mitigating of a changing climate and the opportunities of a growing economy?
Yeah, you know, I would just like to really see, you know, really kind of put the pedal to the metal and accelerate the transition to net zero, keep moving forward, and continue to see where the opportunities are to make progress, you know, listening to folks around the country, finding out, you know, what's possible, I think is really what I want to see. Is I want to see Vice President Harris, when she is president, listening to people, listening to folks in our agricultural communities and finding out what can we do to help them out. How can we, you know, make sure that we are helping to mitigate some of these severe weather events so that we're not seeing our producers and our farmers losing their crops or seeing floods come and, you know, damage, you know, homes and businesses, right? So I think that really listening to people and finding out what can we do to help and how can we make some of those more kind of big, bold steps forward is what I hope to see.
And it's not just about trying to, you know, be cleaner in the future to not be causing such a problem with the climate, but understanding that there are problems right now and that they have to be mitigated, and that, you know, the Biden administration through the bipartisan infrastructure law has certainly helped communities coast to coast with that. But it's actually something coming to the U.S. Senate race that Senator Tammy Baldwin was working on long before this year, was making sure that, you know, when infrastructure projects were established, that they kept in mind a changing climate. In other words, if a bridge was washed out, that when it was replaced, it would be replaced not to the old standard, but to a new standard, understanding that we live in a time where, you know, flash floods are worse and tornadoes are more extreme and hurricanes are more frequent. And I just don't know, Melissa, if the election goes, you know, for the Republicans, I don't know that that kind of smart planning and therefore the spending on it will be there for all of our hometowns.
Right. You know, you would certainly question whether it would continue. And I, you know, that's, I think it's all the more reason that, you know, we are seeing the enthusiasm for Vice President Harris and for Governor Walz from people all over the country, and really from environmental organizations and from voters who are really motivated by climate. You know, we are seeing climate advocates who are just absolutely celebrating the fact that we have Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket, because they know what her record is on these issues, that they know she has spent, you know, decades in public service, and that all the way back to her time as district attorney, she has been, you know, using her platform, using her position in office to protect the environment and communities that have, you know, suffered disproportionately from pollution. So she is, you know, she is the real deal. And I think that has really invigorated people. That is one of the reasons, I think. I mean, there are many reasons I think we're seeing a lot of excitement for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And I do think that their record on climate is part of it. And I think that we're going to see a lot of folks who are very motivated to send climate champions to the White House to continue the work that started under Joe Biden.
And I guess I'd better say as well, especially when you're at a political convention like this, that it's not all roses here. There are most definitely, and I'm sure I will see them next time I step out of the hotel, that you will see people protesting because change isn't happening fast enough. And that's a fair viewpoint to have. It's one that frustrates people who are in politics, because politics is about making compromises and making the progress that you can make. But Melissa, I just want to get on the record that there are most definitely going to be people, primarily, you know, Democratic aligned, who are frustrated that not nearly enough is being done. And we're going to keep hearing those voices.
And that's fair. I think that's important too, to have you know, to have those voices, because you want those voices to hold people accountable, right? That is an important part of the process to keep things moving, and to keep us on the right track going forward. You know, but you also want, you want to make sure that those conversations are rooted in reality, and that people understand what's possible. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't push to go, you know, as far, as fast as we responsibly can. But we, you know, we have to know that, you know, we're not going to be able to meet everyone's expectations with what we get accomplished. It's just never going to be possible.
No, but it's about respecting those who want to continue sounding the alarm about the damage that's been done to our environment. It's just that you find that a lot of our conversations here also focus on the economic aspect of it, simply because, again, there are people who they may not necessarily agree. They don't see, they don't understand, you know, the extent of the climate crisis, but they do understand that the economy is changing and are looking for reasons to, you know, not miss the bus. By the way, an electric powered bus, you know, as it comes by heading off into the future here. Melissa Baldoff, thank you again for helping us establish some of the climate conversations that are happening here at the convention. We appreciate it so much. Enjoy the convention. Enjoy the week.
Thank you.
All right, we should also note, I hadn't mentioned the Brewers at all. I mean, come on, the Brewers. Look at this. They opened up a 3-game series in St. Louis, and their trade deadline acquisition, Frankie Montas, pitched 7 innings for the Brewers. 1 hit, 1 walk. Neither got past first base. Things got a little dicey in the 8th, but and then the 9th when they had the bases loaded, but Devin Williams shut it all down. The Brewers held on to win 3-2 to go 21 games above 500. Melissa Kay joins us next as we have today's history lesson on Up North News Radio, live from Chicago.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart.
Put a little Jackie DeShannon into this convention week. Fits in with the theme. Jackie DeShannon is 83 years old today. Kentucky native singer-songwriter, had that song along with What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love. Melissa Kay from locally grown radio, WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, joins us as well. Melissa, how are you?
Oh, good morning. I am not in a hotel room, so I'm better than you.
Yeah, it's, you know. It's,
wow, opening up hot there, is Melissa.
Sorry, I have fair hangover.
Oh yes, you've been a fair attendee, haven't you?
Yes, yeah. We kicked off the Marshfield Fair yesterday, so okay. I'll be there every day this week.
Oh, okay. What about the truth booth? Will that be there too?
Well, hopefully we'll see if Jorge can make it. You know, he blew me off for Harrison Walls. Wow. So, you know, I can't even be mad at him.
But I can call him out. Okay. Yep. Hey, one more thing about Jackie DeShannon. One of the songs that she wrote, Betty Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes.
Really?
Yep.
Betty Davis Eyes. My Kim Carnes always sounds like a raspier Bob Dylan.
Hey, I've never seen them both in the same room. You don't know. You don't know. This would be the anniversary of the birth of country and crossover pop legend Kenny Rogers was born on this day in 1938. Here he is with the first edition.
You've painted up your lips and rolled and curled your tinted hair.
Kenny Rogers passed away in 2020, Houston, Texas native. Other birthdays today include Craig Counsell, manager of the Chicago Cubs, who are 11.5 games behind the Brewers. No. Craig Counsell is 54 today. Race car driver Paul Menard is 44 years old today. The history books, the first Lincoln-Douglas debate was held in Illinois in the state in 1858, part of Lincoln's campaign for Senate for Congress. And in 1959, President Eisenhower signed an executive order proclaiming Hawaii would become the 50th state in the Union. Happy birthday to Kacey Musgraves. She is 36 years old today.
You hold tight to your
such a good voice. And I love the Texas "you're" that's in those lyrics of hers. "Your Umbrella." Okay, this one, I guess, now formally dates me, but one of my favorite albums is the soundtrack to the romantic comedy Sleepless in Seattle, and it was the number one album this day in 1993. A couple of contemporary hits, but also some from like Nat King Cole. We're going to play some Jimmy Durante in the next hour off the Sleepless soundtrack. but I'm guessing the soundtrack or the movie, not familiar territory for either one of you.
I think that's one of the first romantic comedies I ever saw.
Oh, okay. I really liked it. Meg Ryan, Tom Hanks.
Yeah. It's Meg Ryan.
I'm more of a French Kiss guy. I like that movie better.
Oh.
Oh. Okay. Or are you? You would have said Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, I love that. You've Got Mail.
I love both. I love all of them. But if I'm going to watch any romantic comedy, especially a Meg Ryan vehicle, it's always going to be French Kiss.
Interesting. Now we've met one. There you go. Let's see. On this day in 2012, Taylor Swift's hit "We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together" became the single with the most digital sales for a female artist this day 12 years ago. Which, 623,000 digital copies sold was a big deal back in 2012. I mean, now Melissa and I could do a duet and probably get 600,000 digital downloads.
Oh, let's try, Pat.
You heard that, folks. That is on the air and recorded for posterity in the truth booth with Pat Kreitlow.
I don't know. I wouldn't do justice to the tunes I'd like to use, including from another one of my favorite albums, and that would be Frank Sinatra and Count Basie live at the Sands. Count Basie was born on this day 120 years ago in 1904, and the Sinatra Live at the Sands album includes one of Basie's classics, the 1 o'clock jump. On the national day calendar for today, this is National Spumoni Day, National Senior Citizens Day. I'm feeling it. And only one other on the list today. And last year, Dr. Lyerly was our guest that day, so we could ask her to talk about it. This is Report Upcoding Fraud Day. Weirdly specific holiday, but for those people in the medical professions who are upcoding, in other words, putting things into the computers that they can bill more, that's fraud, kids, and then it should be reported.
So what you're saying is there's a day for snitches, Pat?
There's a day for snitches. There we are.
And we have issues with American healthcare? What?
Yeah, right.
Well, that's, that is the rumor. Back to Count Basie for a moment. I want to play one more from him because, again, one of my all-time favorite movies is Mel Brooks's Blazing Saddles. And there you see Sheriff Bart going through the desert on his horse, and you hear this great soundtrack. And then as he's going through the west across the desert, right in the middle of nowhere, it turns out it's actually live music. It's Count Basie and his band playing this from Blazing Saddles. Got a picture. There he is riding his horse, the late Cleveland Little. He's heading toward town. And you're thinking, yeah, this is a great little tune. The camera opens up and in the middle of the desert. It's Count Basie's band. Oh, and Sheriff awesome. Bart rides up, slaps him a little high five, and then goes moving on his way. Just the best, most irreverent stuff in those Mel Brooks films. God. Melissa, what else are you up to besides, the fair is enough.
That is quite a bit because I got to take the helm for every day pretty much between now and I'm hoping just Saturday, but maybe Sunday. I don't know. I read the contract and it was oddly
vague.
You must be there every day.
Oh, never mind.
So somebody's got to be there.
Apparently.
And apparently you're the responsible one who's going to be doing that.
No, somebody's got to do it. Work with a bunch of degenerates. So, no, I'm kidding. I love my team. They're amazing.
Melissa's taking no prisoners today.
Welcome to the truth booth with Melissa K. The K stands for themselves? Truth.
Hey, Seth is on vacation this whole week. I have to be on air with James by myself. for 3 days in this a row.
Really going places. I'm loving this.
I have 2.5 weeks coming up on my own. So as of tomorrow. So.
Oh well, I feel you.
Who wants to be on the show?
You guys are great.
And, no, it's fun. Love radio.
You don't turn things over to people you don't trust. Thank you, Melissa. Have a great day.
You too, guys.
We'll hear much more from Wisconsin.